The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Attention, true crime enthusiast. Searching for a way to unwind after diving deep into the mysteries that keep you up at night? Look no further.
Introducing Lazarus Naturals, your trusted companion for CBD relief. With a commitment to transparency, Lazarus Naturals oversees every step from farm to doorstep, ensuring purity and quality you can trust.
Visit LazarusNaturals.com today and discover how CBD can help you decompress and recharge for your next investigation.
That's LazarusNaturals.com.
Lazarus Naturals, your partner in unraveling the mysteries of true crime.
Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. This is our weekly listener mail segment, fellow conspiracy realist, but it is a little bit different. In some ways, it's more like an episode. Here's what happens. Every so often, Matt, Noel, and I will do an episode that genuinely sparks a groundswell of responses, feedback, anecdotes, sometimes hate mail, firsthand experience, and more. And so for this week's listener mail segment, we wanted to focus on one conversation that clearly hit home with a lot of our fellow listeners. Here are the facts. A few weeks ago, we did a two-part series on controversy, facts, fiction, myths surrounding both unions and union busting. And it gets into some weird places. You can listen to it now. We talked about the history of unions in the West, from their roots in guild systems up to the present day. I want to shout out Ridiculous History. Noel, you and I did an episode on some Pinkerton-related stuff, which you should very much check out. There's a deep dive. Right. Which episodes were those?
I don't recall. But it's just such a common trope in history, especially when it comes to rich people trying to wield control over the less fortunate with an iron fist. The Pinkertons essentially served as like a private police force who could do everything from bust unions to intimidate, essentially like mafioso type activities. Like, you know, you better pay your protection fee, or else it'd be a shame if something happened to that nice little shotgun shack of yours.
Exactly.
But we did look at the union busting, the people who want to prevent unions from happening historically. We also looked at some of the corruption and dark side of unions. So we wanted to really take a full picture look at this thing and give you everything we could find when it comes to what can go wrong, right? When you're either trying to form a union or when you're trying to break up a union or prevent one from forming.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we already knew going into this, there were, unfortunately, multiple cases of corruption and conspiracy, both amid union busters and sometimes amid unions. Entirely unrelated, want to extend particular thanks to our fellow conspiracy realist in the world of TV and film production, many of whom shared hilarious, scary stories about Teamsters. And many, many folks, several reached out to me directly, asking to entirely be off the record. So just giving you all the acknowledgement as much as we can.
Well, I mean, it's a good time to talk about this topic, too, and to even follow up, because in the news, you know, there was a big win when a New York branch of Amazon warehouse workers were able to unionize or voted to establish a union. And now another branch has voted to reject the union. But the lawyers that are working for, I believe, the other party are claiming all kinds of nefarious activities in terms of union busting type stuff on the part of Amazon managers. And we know that this kind of stuff is not beyond them, just in terms of like what they are willing to do to get things done, to get the packages, you know, where they're supposed to be on time, come, you know, inclement weather, life threatening situations or what have you. So things like disciplinary action against, you know, folks that are supporting the union, all kinds of anti-union rhetoric in the workplace. And, you know, again, this is just allegations, but I just wouldn't put it past them.
Well, it's interesting. We're going to hear today insight and firsthand experience from people who have been going through those processes, people who have been a part of union for years, some people who are trying to start some. We're going to get lots of real insight, firsthand stuff from you. In fact, someone named you called in, guys.
Yes. And there's something I want to add here that many union busting activities are conspiratorial, but they're not theoretical. I mean, they did happen. They are happening now. In this exploration, you know, we took two episodes for it because we wanted to be transparent and objective to the best of our ability. We also knew there's much more to both sides of this proverbial coin. So we asked you for your opinions, for your insight, for your experiences. And since you're the best audience in all of podcasting, you delivered. Here's where it gets crazy. We received tons of voicemails, emails, other correspondence. And before we dive in, I just got to say, I was profoundly impressed by the level of discourse. Like you said, Matt, the stories we're about to share do not all agree. They do not all reach the same conclusions. But every single person or entity who wrote to us wrote in a unique, respectful, very well thought out response. So thank you. You know, some of these messages we had to edit for length, but we did our best to keep the substance of each one intact.
Well, and can we also just say that, you know, we have firsthand experience with this as the iHeart podcast network recently unionized with the support due to the efforts of many of our colleagues. I think we're all intensely proud of those folks and the work they did. And kind of proud of our company that there wasn't that kind of Amazon level of pushback and negativity. And it was a very even-handed discussion that ultimately got both sides on the same page.
Yeah. But just wait till you hear what Tex has to say about it. Oh, Tex has some thoughts. We're going to get into it.
Yeah, we're not going to get to everything today. But again, we had so many responses that we wanted to dedicate this weekly listener mail segment just to this. Let's jump around here. Jump around. Never mind. A little bit.
Can I stay in my seat? Is it okay if I don't get out of my seat?
You spiritually jump. You know, metaphorically jump. Jump with your heart. That's what counts.
Can I get down, though?
Oh, yes. You can always. You always get down, you know.
Usually I jump up to get down, generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, one time I missed the bus. Geez. All right. So Justine writes in to say, "Hi, guys. I was listening to your union busting episodes, and I thought I'd write in since I work for a union. I currently represent classified public school employees, everyone but the teachers and administrators, and I mostly negotiate contracts and handle employee grievances. There's so much I could say about unions, but I'll try to keep it brief." This is, by the way, this is a positive, this is a pro-union message. "You asked for one thing I wish everyone knew, and I have two answers. One, if you have a union, get involved. Even if just going to your union meetings and making your voice heard, it counts. The union is what you make of it. Two, if you don't have a union, you can still affect real change for you and your coworkers if you're willing to put in the legwork. Even non-unionized workers have the right to protected, concerted activity. That means anytime two or more workers act collectively to improve wages or working conditions, it still counts. There's a ton of different things you could do, and it works. Just Google protected, concerted activity and collective actions for ideas. That's it from me. Thanks for a great show. So I thought that was kind of a safer place to start, right? Someone who clearly works with a union and enjoys it. So thank you, Justine, for writing in.
Oh, yeah. I love Justine's concept of if you don't have a union, maybe if you don't even want to have a union or plan on creating a union, but you still have workers who are working together and want to see some kind of change, you can still do something. That makes a ton of sense. I just want to, again, shout out those keywords that she said to Google: protected, concerted activity, and collective actions. That's very cool.
And so that is obviously, as we said, that's a message from someone who finds themselves very much in support of their union, their workers' organization, and they've had a great experience. What if we go to someone who had a negative experience?
Yeah, let's hear from Samurai. This is a pretty even-handed, sort of two-prong approach to thinking about unions, with some good and some bad. It's probably the way we should look at most things. Samurai writes, in my many years on this planet, I have had the chance to work with three unions. GEMCO/Lucky Foods, Food Services Union. They were both terrible. Only there to support themselves and their lobbyists, provided no discernible benefit to me or any of the other members. And when we went on strike, they provided next to no benefits to us. I crossed the line and returned to work and was fired as soon as the strike was over. Yikes. That is all the bad things that people say potentially can result from unionizing, but I guess it all depends on the union and the organizing committee and just the how much you trust the work that the union has done.
Can you guys dissolve some of my ignorance? When Samurai says crossed the line,
what that means the picket line. Yeah, so
broke
like
the strike.
The strike. It's called being a scab, right?
That's
Ben?
Correct. Yeah, and so we'll actually run into someone who encountered that later on in this episode.
And I think one reason we all maybe collectively aren't big fans of Uber is that the company allegedly, I mean, you know, the proof was in the pudding. It was something that could be observed, acted as scabs when New York Taxi Workers Alliance union members, which is an affiliate of the AFL-CIO that represents many immigrants, were striking. And then Uber essentially looked at it as an opportunity to, you know, fill a demand and come in there and you know, essentially undermine those efforts. So, yeah, it's a big deal to be a strikebreaker. But if you're striking and your union's not doing anything for you, this samurai was basically like, well, screw this. I need the work. I'm not actually working towards any benefits, so why should I bother if all this is for, you know, the lobbyists and for the interests of the union itself? So I totally get that. Okay, back to Sam. CWA, the Communications Workers of America. Great union, though a little top-heavy and hard to get answers from for complaints. Not great about raises, but not terrible either. Okay. Unnamed school district, present employer, CSEA. I am not a teacher, but as I have mentioned to you in the past, I am an IT stooge. Okay. This union is one of the best ones I have ever worked for. Good benefits, and I have had three really good raises. I do not mind paying about $200 a year in dues because I have made that back several fold. My main point is that if the union is there for the people and works for them, then they are great. CWA and CSEA are both good examples of that. FSW was terrible. They were more about getting the company what it wanted than the employees.
Mm.
Which makes sense because that's an experience that I've heard relayed by many people, especially folks who've had multiple careers or multiple gigs that found them with multiple unions. As we said in our two-part episode, they're very much not all created equally, right? Like you can say the word sandwich, that could be literally thousands of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Not my best analogy.
It's good to hear about the CSEA in particular, just because many of us listening and talking right now have family members who have been a part of a teacher's union. You guys, hey, we got that message from Tex. that I told you about a little, I kind of hinted at it earlier. You want to hear somebody who's not cool with the unions? Just hear what they have to say?
Absolutely, because we started with very pro-union. We started with somewhere in the middle. And like we said, we got a lot of responses. So here's someone who found themselves very much against unions. Right, Matt?
Right. After a quick message from our sponsors, we will hear from Tex. We'll be right back.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop. Podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we've returned, and everyone, I present to you Tex,
Ben, Matt, Noel, Doc. It's your old pal Tex. Let me tell you, unions suck 100%. They are, as you described, little tiny fiefdoms. They are HOAs for employment, okay? It gives little tiny people big platforms and lots of money that will 100% of the time corrupt them absolutely. We need to do away with unions permanently in our nation, but not for the reason you think. The reason that we need to do away with unions is the fact that they need to exist in the first place. Think about it. When there were little children losing their hands, changing bobbins in the factories, unions were the answer. No, they were not. Federal regulation that says, hey, don't put children in dangerous situations and make them lose their hands. So instead of Amazon creating a union so that their employees don't have to pee in bottles, which frankly is horrifying, and I feel terrible for those employees that have to go through that. But the fact is, collective bargaining isn't the answer. Legislation that forces companies to treat people as humans is the answer. That's it. Simple as that. Every time a union forms, whatever their platform is, whatever their reason for existence is, probably needs to be codified into law to prevent that from happening across the board. That's the failure. And so when we use unions as a stopgap, we end up with corruption. We end up with little people with big power and big money. What could go wrong? Hey, gentlemen and ladies, have yourselves a great weekend. Thanks for everything you do. Such a great show. Bye-bye.
So that's somebody who's saying, you know, you don't have to agree with the person. But again, what I'm saying about the discourse here is you wrote in text. And I remember when I was just playing, I thought, oh, text. But this, it wrote in clearly anti-union with a different spin on it and still wasn't lambasting anyone, wasn't, you know, obviously a reasonable guy. This is his conclusion. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, I do feel like the need for unions in the first place is the byproduct of a corrupt system that's built around the money first mentality that has been the legacy of this country and that continues to be. It's the same thing that goes into the fact that nobody can get reasonable health care unless you make a lot of money. The foundation of this country is kind of based on enriching the super rich and kind of stomping on the little guy at the expense of the little guy. So, of course, the little guy is going to want some protection from this corrupt system that doesn't look after them. And because it's a byproduct of a corrupt system, it sometimes becomes corrupt itself.
Well, I would also point out labor movements are responsible for things like the weekend and even the 8-hour workday. Those things that do 100%. Exist, those worker protections that do exist, did come about because of organization. And that's, you know, I'm not going to insert
laws, though,
my
Ben.
Opinion here. I'm just going to say that's a fact.
But those are laws, to our caller's point. Those are the product of labor movement. You know,
right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But not, they're not something that the union itself guarantees, that it requires the union. Those are things, changes that have been pushed for, that have been turned into law, which is what Texas' point is, that that's what we need to push for and not think we can solve all this stuff via unions. But
right, but
look how
labor,
much it took
labor to even, yeah. movements are made by unions. Unions were doing labor movements. So like their long-term effect was those laws.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you functionally, but a union isn't required to have a movement. You can have a movement with or without a union. The union is a organization that has its own bylaws and is its own system.
Right.
You don't
I understand.
Have to have a, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I'm saying that the labor movements that created those laws were, in many cases, union powered. Now, they don't, maybe it's a maze puzzle maze situation. They don't always have to be the same thing. But I do think that's a really interesting perspective that that Tex has. The question I would pose is, how does it get to the point where it is legislation? That's the question. Like, how can you do that?
Look what you did, Tex. Look what you've done. No, I just want to, I would reiterate, this is a great question, Ben, and I don't have the answer for you, but it's a great perspective that I don't see very often, an anti-union, pro-federal regulation standpoint, right? I mean, often those things, I don't know, it seems like they kind of go together in the point you're making. Often the unions are the things, or the labor movements are the things that get change enacted in Congress, because in order to have a law, you got to get it through that messed up labyrinthine thing. But Tex, I mean, I kind of agree with him in some respects that if it was on the books officially for everyone, you wouldn't need the labor union, right? But unfortunately, we're not in that maybe utopian setup right now.
It might be a question of, yeah, where does that if come into play? How do you have something as strong as the labor movements of the past that started, you know, the worker rights that are often enjoyed today, at least in theory? How do you start that without some kind of organizing? In the past, those were union created. But to your point, no, they don't necessarily have to be. Especially in the age of social media, it could just be a bunch of people who say, we want a 4-day work week. And if billions do and just stop showing up, you're going to fire everybody? The technology's not there yet.
You nailed something really important there, Ben. And like, I do think there are things that unions can achieve that individuals that want to start a movement would take them a lot longer to get the support to achieve, because unions have their own internal mechanisms and lobbyists, and they're part of the system at this point in a way where they can, you know, affect change in some ways if they're good. But the social media angle does, it's almost like, why do we need record companies anymore when individual artists can make a SoundCloud account and get discovered? And that's not easy to do, but it does happen. And then you're not beholden to this record company. So I just wonder if there is some point to be made that the unions in the old school model are a little outdated, or maybe there's like a union 2.0 that hasn't really developed yet. I don't know the answer. I'm just asking a bunch of questions.
We need labor CPACs, guys.
Oh gosh, that's the answer. Dark money and labor. There's plenty of that. Yeah. All you have to do is look at Hoffa. But yeah, like the question is how does a group enact systemic change? And it's a question that people have quarreled with throughout the majority of written human history. I mean, the United States itself was founded by a group of people asking, how do we affect systemic change? But the systemic change they wanted, of course, primarily benefited them. I know that makes people, that ruffles some feathers sometimes, but it is true, you know.
Tex, yeah. I'm going to need you to send a voicemail in responding to that statement alone, please.
Well, it's true, systemic change. But these are the kind of conversations that we were having, and we were grateful for these. How about we go to an email from someone who had experience as a working union buster or working with a union busting company. To do this, we're going to go to Chris. And again, everybody in these conversations, they're being incredibly insightful and respectful. We're grateful for all of these. Chris writes in and says, hi guys, first off, love the show. Longtime listener, first time caller. I listened to the Union Busting Part 1 episode yesterday. I used to work for a PR firm that partnered with a law firm called They were a management side union negotiating firm. Their primary interest was working with management to either stop a union vote or make sure it went in their favor. If you get what I'm saying, that's me adding that, not Chris. The PR firm I was with partnered with them on what language to use in communicating with the employees and how to deliver that messaging. Flyers, videos, websites, etc. This is modern day union busting, says Chris. And I'm going to elide over some of this. I want to highlight one part. These guys, including our team, he's referring to lawyers that he worked with. These guys, including our team, used any dirty tricks they could to prevent a vote or make the employees think the union was not going to be good for them. They used overly confusing language and math relating to fees and raises and so on to keep them off balance. I used to say that 100 years ago, our job was done by guys wearing tin stars carrying axe handles. Cough, cough, Pinkertons. Of course, they didn't tell me that they did this kind of work before I accepted the job. I was stuck there for a few years to support my family until I could get away from all these horrible people. So this guy did not have a good experience with union busting, or Chris didn't. So that's interesting, because I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't particularly expecting someone who had worked in one of these firms to write to us as well. So just to give you a sense of how many folks are reaching out here, people aren't just reaching out with those opinions. We had a lot of folks relating personal experience. And we have people not just from the US, but around the world.
All right. Well, here's one for kind of a more international perspective. I can admit my own ignorance and not fully realizing that unions were an international phenomenon. And of course, it makes sense. I just think of it as an American thing because, you know, of all the corruption and horrible things that need to be dealt with. But these problems are not unique to the United States of America, though maybe they're a bit more prominent here. In this one humble podcaster's perspective. So here we go. From Peter. Peter says, hi, team. I'm writing this with my tinfoil hat on in Brisbane. Australia. Loving the pod, guys. Keep up the great content and the non-biased way you present it. On to business. I worked from 2012 to 2019 for an MNC that manufactured fiberglass insulation. The major manufacturing plant is in Melbourne, and at the time employed close to 100 staff. Many of them belonged to a major manufacturing union. This union was historically very effective in winning excellent conditions and remuneration for its members working on this site. For example, completely unskilled workers were paid $50 an hour, which is around double what most factory workers earn in Australia. It's more than what many skilled tradespeople earn. In 2017, the EBA, Enterprise Bargaining Agreement, came up for renewal. I'm not privy to the details of the negotiation, but I know the GM at the time was ready for to get real. As the business started to stockpile stock at locations around the country, it appears that the workers did not like what was offered, as approximately 88 of them walked off the job in March of 2017. The strike lasted longer than expected, I believe. As a result, the business asked the sales, marketing, admin, and non-union warehouse staff if they would relocate to Melbourne to run the manufacturing plant. I immediately agreed, as I felt it was important to keep the company going and therefore keep my job. We went in groups to Melbourne and ran the plant. This involved driving through the picket line of workers into the factory, which was pretty cool to see their faces as we entered to foil their plans. This went on for a couple of months until they agreed to come back to work. The upshot of their action was that a lot of smart people got to work in the factory and realized that there were many improvements, especially in the area of automation, that could be made. After a month or so, 25 of the strikers were made redundant. It's fancy talk for fired. I didn't learn that term until actually the British office. So not trying to talk down to anybody. Some people might not know what being made redundant is. For me, it was a stressful time as we had to run my sales territory as well as doing a 12-hour day at the factory. Hopefully a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but I'm glad I had it.
Wow. Okay, so I just want to make sure I fully understand this, guys. My understanding here is that the company and the union were negotiating. Those negotiations weren't going well. So the company made the decision to relocate to a different city. And the person who wrote in, Peter, relocated with the company to continue working, like essentially as a scab?
Well, from what I understand, what's happening here is that there was a lot of non-manufacturing staff. Right? The admin, the marketing, sales, and Peter was in sales. He had a sales territory. And because the negotiations went sideways and the strike occurred, the company asked people who would not ordinarily be working at the plants to go work at the plants.
Because the union workers were striking while the negotiations were going.
Gotcha. Yes.
And those union workers were being paid more than normal. Okay, got it. And they're saying then automation and what Peter's calling skilled workers actually stepped in and improved the factory. Okay.
And so now we have a story from someone who participated in breaking the line, right? Mm-hmm. So just it was fascinating to see how many facets of experience we got here. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and then maybe we jump back to voicemail, huh?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, Podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
All right, we're back, and we're going to a message from you. Yes, you. Really, this time. Yes, it's you.
Good evening, gentlemen, and of course, codename Doc. My name is You, and I have been a witness to some of the union hijinks your episodes of late have described, including a major retailer that I worked for that had signs plastered all over for 800 numbers for managers to call if any of the employees mentioned the union. We, of course, would get off work on our overnight shift, go out at 7 o'clock in the morning for several beers, and refer to this as the union meeting. Doing this in front of several higher-ups in the company resulted in our direct supervisors being pulled in for an interrogation with the company union busters. It was quite hilarious. Feel free to use my name and voice on the air. Again, this is You. I thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Union.
Yep.
I saw what you did there. I heard what you did there. So, I mean, that happens, right? That happens so often. And you don't hear about a lot of recourse taken or any options for recourse on the parts of employees. You know, I, in another life, a very brief anecdote. I worked with a logistics company in the United States and abroad, and stuff like unions and OSHA were a joke. Let me say it this way. OSHA was a joke that all the upper management found unfailingly hilarious, and unions, unionization was, as you've depicted, you, a fireable offense. And there's not, you know, there's not much you can do about it depending on where you're at in life, how much money you have to self-fund a legal battle, or the state you work in, like a so-called right-to-work state.
Well, yeah, it is funny. You know, I've only worked in one place, Ben, really. Well, two places, but mostly one place. And in our offices, we've always had all the OSHA signage that you have to have up, you know, required by law.
Yeah.
And nobody looks at that. Nobody pays attention to those things. Those are laws. Those are important things, and they're for you as an employee, as a worker, but they're just kind of disregarded, at least in my experience.
Often, yeah. Often that seems to be the case. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't have the visibility to say that is the case in the majority of industries or anything like that. But I know that I see that stuff, like you said, ignored. It's a dusty laminated sign somewhere. And nobody really looks at it these days unless they screwed up and forgot their phone, right? So when people forget their phones, they'll read anything, you know? So,
yeah, and when you're making coffee.
Right.
Put those
you're
eyes
microwaving
on something.
You're like, what am I going to do for this 3 minutes? okay, OSHA, what's up?
But I have the right to, what is this? Man. Let's go to another message from somebody. Thank you for writing in.
Oh, you. You, specifically you, and Milk Crate. Milk Crate has written to us to talk a little bit about, this seems like maybe pro-union, but Milk Crate, as we'll come to find, feels that they have run into some sketchy things that go on what they call the laborer's side of the union. Matt, you haven't read an email yet. Do you want to do the honors on this one? Do you know Milk Crate?
Yeah, I mean, I'll read voicemail all day, but email, I don't know. All right, here we go. This is from Milk Crate. They say, hey, guys, you can call me the Milk Crate. If you want to know more about me and the name, I can tell you the story later. But I just finished listening to your Union Busters episodes. And as an apprentice at my local IBEW, do we know what that is, guys?
It's the International Bureau of Elmo Wankers. Before the Tickle Me Elmo, there was the Wank Me Elmo, and they had a union. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, I think.
Okay. Cool.
But I don't know what that encompasses.
So. We're keeping all of this in.
Please cut that.
100%. We're keeping all of it in.
Okay, if we keep
that
the part.
That was so funny.
If we keep the part where you said 100%, we're keeping all of it.
Okay, good. And this, all of this. Okay, so we're going back to Milk Crate. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Yes?
Okay.
Yes.
And Milk Crate is appreciative of the story being told. This is Milk Crate. Although I am obviously pro-union, there are some sketchy things that go on the laborer's side, depending on which local you're a part of. As a union member, my goal is not to screw over my employer, but to build up their reputation as well as mine by doing a good job so that we can both continue to profit. Unfortunately, not everyone sees it that way, with some secretive groups known as fleas, F-L-E-A-S, within the union going so far as to sabotage jobs for the, quote, sake of the brotherhood. What? Ooh. That's me.
So you got some your fleas and you got your scabs.
That's right. Yeah.
that's a good point.
Some locals have a tight-knit personality akin to gangs, where they go so far as to say that if you don't drive a certain make of vehicle, you'll get your tires slashed and you'll be targeted by threats and actual violence until you leave that job or that local or get an approved vehicle. Other places like Hawaii and New York City are notoriously against having, quote, outsiders, official union IBEW members traveling for work from other locals in their jurisdictions. That makes sense, I guess, in some weird way, but not allowing IBEW members from another state to come in. And they will blatantly discriminate against anyone not from their home local. The majority of the IBEW isn't like this, but places and people like that do exist and are a direct result of the nature of unionizing. Oh, interesting. Okay, now that's a statement, a direct result of the nature of unionizing.
Yeah, please finish. I've definitely got some perspective on this.
Sure. On a good note, though, the IBEW has been surprisingly pro-women since its conception in the late 1800s. Same rate of pay from the beginning with equal rights and representation. As far as voting and politics, most people I know have views that differ from the political party that gives us money, and we don't experience negative kickback for having our own personal opinions or voices. With everything, there's a good and a bad side, but unions are, in my humble opinion, a good thing in a world where employers can't seem to retain decent behavior towards their employees.
That's a statement, too, and absolutely accurate. Look, I used to work in a theater, and there was a union, you know, for theater workers, stagehands or whatever, and a lot of the, like, older guys that had been in it for a long time, not all of them, but some of them, just had this attitude of just, like, doing the bare minimum all the time, and just there was this kind of, like, malaise associated with, well, I'm protected, therefore I don't actually have to try that hard. Maybe that was just my situation, but it sounds like this is a product of kind of that same attitude. This is a more outward, like, violent kind of discrimination, but there is certain kinds of, like, cronyism and sort of, like, you know, like you said, this kind of gang-like mentality where it's like, well, I'm protected, therefore you know, you can't mess with me. Therefore, I can kind of do whatever I want.
Well, I mean, I hear you, but to me, it reads more as someone or some small group saying, don't take my or our work from us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure. Stay out of my backyard because that's where I work kind of thing.
Yeah, there's that, but there's also, you know, there's also the basic idea from the journeyman of old, which is saying, hey, if we all agree we have to be paid a living wage for this, then, you know, you could call it price fixing too, but if we all agree to do this, then they can't exploit other people. And so with this, we are drawing to a close. We know we didn't get to everyone, fellow conspiracy realists, but it was very important to us to thank everybody, to share these perspectives, and to let you know that there's nothing wrong with your perspective or, you know, your own personal experience. No one can invalidate that, but it is meaningful, and perhaps we could argue even imperative, to listen to people that you don't agree with. With that, we just took some time off air to figure out what we were going to end on. And I think the three of us unanimously voted for a voicemail.
Yes, a voice message from one Remy.
Hi, my name is Remy. I am a former employee of a couple of places that are known probably in the news for recent unionization efforts. I've done some occasional knowledge awareness, class consciousness, troublemaking, et cetera, at places I've worked. And, you know, on its face, getting the working class to work together seems like it should be very easy. You know, we just explain how our labor is valuable versus the desires of often a major corporation. But for some reason, people keep siding with the corporation, especially when I talk to people that are maybe of an older generation, Gen X or, you know, boomers, that they seem to operate on this mob mentality. And I mean, literally a mob mentality. Their idea of a union comes from mob movies. But, you know, when you look at today, the corporate owned media still does a great job, really, of showing unions at a way that's easiest to create an anti-union narrative. So one thing I've noticed is that they tend to focus on strikes or labor organizing from people like nurses and teachers, because those groups are really easy to kind of scapegoat and point at the people that they are not, quote, like helping. You know, with teachers, you can say, oh, they're holding the kids' education hostage. With nurses, you can say there are patients that they aren't helping. So it's really easy to kind of obfuscate the actual labor issues involved and just say, oh, man, why can't they just work and, you know, take care of these children and these sick people? So the media is a lot less focusing, I think, on labor movements and strikes at places like Starbucks and Amazon, because it's so much more cut and dry. You know, it's a lot easier to say, like, this is about coffee or getting your package delivered in 2 days. So, yeah, and then they all obviously, like, always play into, I think, this idea that millennials or younger people, Gen Z, don't want to work. And that is part of the demonization of labor movement, is that, you know, I had to suffer through this. You should, too. But, yeah, this is something I've noticed that really kind of makes it an uphill battle sometimes for what to me feels like such an easy topic to get people to the pro-labor side on.
And Remy went a little bit longer than 3 minutes.
Solid ending, though. Gotta say.
Well said. Yeah. Because as long as think about it, if you want to enforce some kind of inequality, as has been observed multiple times across multiple human civilizations, then you just need to keep the majority of the people at the bottom fighting each other. It doesn't matter what they're fighting about, as long as they're fighting about something and not looking at where your hands are going and what they're putting in their pockets.
It is such a good point, though, the way he highlights, you know, things like Starbucks, which is a giant corporation making bukus of money off of something that is a luxury, you know, for the most part, upper middle to wealthy people. And Amazon, which is a company that obviously feeds countless billions to, like, you know, this one shiny headed bald guy and his, you know, upper management, all for the luxury of getting our spoiled American asses our packages in a day and a half. So it's easier to highlight, especially when you see the gross mistreatment of those employees and the insane hours and all of that stuff with the Amazon specifically. So it's an easier thing to wrap your head around. But with, like, teachers unions, the idea of demonizing a teacher for wanting to not have to pay for supplies out of right. their own pocket, which we know still happens to this day all the time, to basically only be able to go into that career if you have a spouse who is making more money than you. Like, it's like, even like, it's like a passion thing. And oh, but they're so passionate. They're so, you know, I hate that argument.
No, this is very personally, I see it as unethical and unclean. I mean, I name one teacher at a public school in the United States, not even counting the ones that I'm related to or that I believe you're related to, Matt. Name one that hasn't had to come out of their own funds for supplies, or that hasn't had to work on weekends or weeknights. To demonize those people is unconscionable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In my opinion. Same with like, you're going to demonize nurses because they have to do so much of the work that doctors do for so much less pay.
All of
or
it.
Or physicians' I mean, assistants
not,
right now.
Not, yeah,
there's
not
so many.
I just, you know, it bugs me when you wait for ages at a doctor's office for your appointment. You know, the physician's assistant or the nurse comes in, does all the stuff. They draw all the blood, do all the lab work, and the doctor just kind of waltzes in, gives you a cursory glance, and then signs off on getting your meds refilled. Now, I'm not trying to demonize all doctors. There are doctors and specialists that we absolutely need and that do a very specific thing, but the way our system is set up is like those people are like untouchable and they're getting paid the big bucks. I know they work under a lot of stressful circumstances, but the ones that are actually there doing the work, they don't have that protection, you know, and they are treated more like lower level employees, but they're the ones that are actually doing the work. And Ben, I mean, to go back to your personal connection with the teacher situation, I mean, how much more important a job is there than a teacher to help make the next generation better than the current one, or to like ensure that even those who can't afford private school get a good education. And if you don't have people that are willing to just, you know, do it for the passion or because they can afford it, you're not going to have good quality candidates, or it's just going to be an uphill battle, a Sisyphean task, because they're going to be so piled on with students and extra things that they aren't getting paid for. They have to pay for themselves, and it's not going to be efficient. I'm sorry. It upsets me.
Well, there's only one answer. It's the water treatment plant supervisor to make sure everybody has water. No, I'm just joking.
I've got, just joking. I thought about this idea a lot from a young age. It is something that gets to me, and I do try to be careful not to inject myself or my opinions in this show, but there's a line from Trick Daddy's Thug Holiday. I'm going somewhere with this. That introduces a brilliant question. He asks, how come the judges are making more than the teachers? I'm paraphrasing, but it's an excellent question. There is a very valid argument. You don't have to say the entire system is broken, but there's a very valid argument that parts of it need to be completely redone. To do one last lazy car analogy, you know, a car will still run without air conditioning, but there are going to be times you don't want to ride in that car anymore. So there are very difficult questions that have to be asked. And perhaps one of the best questions to ask when you hear different stances, you have to ask about the source. Talk about this all the time. You have to ask what possible motivation that source may have. You know, like those, there was a great send up in Last Week Tonight a while back regarding union busting activities, where they had this excellent parody video. You know, it's those workplace videos that you have to watch when you're an employee getting onboarded. It's like, occasionally you may hear your coworkers say things like the following, and then someone comes out and does like a little Tim and Eric thing of, you know, collective organizing. They're like, but we solve our problems one-to-one, because here at Kaglomco, we're a family, you know? There's a reason that people are spending so much time and so much money forcing their employees to watch those videos. That's what I think we need to start asking, you know, and that's what we ask in Unions Part 1 and Part 2, which are out now, wherever you find your favorite shows. With this, we want to thank so many of our fellow conspiracy realists, too many to name right now. Thank you to everyone who went on air with us. Thank you to all the people who continue to write in. Stay safe out there. And if you want to be part of this weekly segment, we'd love to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on, what's the other one? YouTube. You can find us on Twitter. We are at the handle Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we're Conspiracy Stuff Show. Check that account out. Lots of new things popping over there. Definitely not the Conspiracy Stuff Show account of yesteryear.
That's right. If you want to be like Tex and Remy and even you, why not call 1-833-STDWYTK and leave us a message? Give yourself a cool nickname when you call in. Let us know if we can use your message and voice on the air. And you got 3 minutes. Say anything you want. We're interested in your opinions, your experience, especially your experience. That is very helpful for us, as we illustrated in this episode, I believe. If you've got more to say, if you've got images or anything else you want to share with us, links, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Attention, true crime enthusiast. Searching for a way to unwind after diving deep into the mysteries that keep you up at night? Look no further.
Introducing Lazarus Naturals, your trusted companion for CBD relief. With a commitment to transparency, Lazarus Naturals oversees every step from farm to doorstep, ensuring purity and quality you can trust.
Visit LazarusNaturals.com today and discover how CBD can help you decompress and recharge for your next investigation.
That's LazarusNaturals.com.
Lazarus Naturals, your partner in unraveling the mysteries of true crime.
Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.